suicide, for instance.
Right. And there also have been a number of instances where, in some cases, again, not all of them, because they've done so many, where they've released people's social security numbers. And obviously that can also cause quite a bit of collateral damage at times.
Yes. And that, of course, is kind of harmful. Do they realize that they're doing that?
Well, again, the hacking operations are led by a much smaller group of people. Uh-huh. I think that's important to note. That's not all of Anonymous. And I think that they are aware of it. It's not entirely clear to me why it is that they use that tactic and they don't redact those elements. I think part of it, but this is a little bit conjecture, it's to draw a heck of a lot of attention, which obviously they do succeed at that. That's not a justification, but that's a consequence. And in that sense, they do draw quite a bit of media attention.
They absolutely do. What kind of people are those?
Well, in the wider Anonymous pool, there is quite a bit of diversity. Certainly not everyone involved is a hacker, by which I mean a kind of computer aficionado with, you know, very strong technical chops. It's a lot of sort of geeks and internet enthusiasts and web designers and some people who aren't even really that involved in the culture of the internet. It's definitely the case that the different networks of Anonymous have what seems to be slightly different cultures. So, for example, one network under the name of Anonops has a very active queer segment in it. The group that protests the Church of Scientology, Chanology, has quite a lot of women involved, whereas I don't see that quite the case with Anonops. So there's some interesting diversity across the many different networks that use the name Anonymous.
Now, with things like Al-Qaeda, you never see one set of people. You've got a lot of wannabe Al-Qaeda members. You've got a lot of other types of members. Is this the same with Anonymous and later on Lulzsec?
Well, it's definitely the case that with Anonymous, anyone can take the name. And it's for that reason that you have different nodes, which is why people have used the comparison with, you know, different cells. But that's also the case with things like the Tea Party in the United States, too, which have many different nodes. Now, there is always a question of, can people take the name Anonymous to do, let's just say, right-wing or highly, highly destructive actions? Can't the name be hijacked? And at some level, the answer is yes. But interestingly enough, although Anonymous, on the one hand, has many different nodes, you can still find the different nodes on things like forums and internet relay chat. And in some cases, they even have channels for reporters. So you can show up and say, hey, did this node do this action? So there are some ways of verifying some actions. And there was once an action against the Westboro Church in the United States, which are probably known for being the most trollish in real life group in the world. And someone did an action under the name Anonymous, which was sort of a fake action that became a real action under Anonymous.
That is actually very interesting. So they kicked people to work to do something. Now you see a loads of arrests in the Netherlands, in the United States, especially in the United Kingdom. Is the joke over?
That's a great question. It's definitely a serious moment. I think it is a kind of interesting wake-up call in many different ways. So it's put certain issues on the table that were known, but now it's you have to eat the issue. You can't ignore it anymore. And there's a couple of different ones. I think the one I'll just mention very briefly has to do with the DDoS as a protest tactic. And there's arguments to be made for why it is and is not effective as a political tactic. And that I want to bracket for one moment and just say, can it, in theory and in practice, ever be used as a protest tactic? And I think the answer is yes, it has been historically. In the United States, that has never really been tried in the courts. And somehow I am not sure that there will be room to even entertain that question.
You would like to make that, or you would you wonder if this is a First Amendment issue.
I think that there must be room, whether or not you think it's politically effective, bracket that question. I do think that there must be room to entertain the DDoS as a tactic that can be used for political purposes, in part because it has been with groups like the Electronic Disturbance Theater in Germany. There was a very successful campaign against Lufthansa in 2003. And while I do think the DDoS can be over-abused and be very ineffective, in part because once it's used frequently, it no longer has the splash that is needed to make it effective, I do think that the December 2010 events with Anonymous were politically conscientious in many ways. And I hope that sort of perspective is allowed as these cases perhaps move to trials.
I see that. You're short on your time, but I've got one final question. When I started in the hacker scene, the world looked different, grandpa speaking. but something in the last couple of years significantly has changed. The doxing that is ongoing all of the time. Is this a permanent change? Is this something that will remain? Or is this a joke and is it nearly over?
That's a great question, because there is a way in which we've heard a lot that this feels a little bit like the 90s, right? And by which people mean that there's a kind of transgressive element to the politics of hacking, because obviously the politics of hacking can take many different forms. And there's also this element of the lulls, which is a kind of very jokey, playful prankster sort of element, but has a kind of frightening side to it as well, right? And I think it's not just going to vanish. There's too many people invested in the culture out of which Anonymous came from, image boards like 4chan, for it to go away. And yet I do think the political movements, the arrests, the subpoenas, the legal cases will absolutely shift it in some fundamental ways. And people have to get slightly more tactical in order to deal with legal threats and in order to protect people as well. I think some people who got involved weren't quite aware of the legal risks of engaging in DDoS. And that is very unfortunate. You do want people to go in with a full kind of consciousness of the risk that they're taking.
Can I ask a final question?
Sure.
What do you think of the government response, and from your professional perspective?
Well, it's at some level not surprising. There is groups like the FBI, CIA in the United States who are mandated with stopping this sort of thing. They're in a sort of game, if you want to call it that. It's not a game. Obviously, it's very, very serious. But they must move forward. I do think, however, that public response and perception matters quite a bit in terms of what can happen during trials, right?
Yep.
If there's people watching, if there's debate about it, if there are people outside of these communities who are also informed about it, it can really change the outcome. And that, in some ways, is what we have to see, whether that happens or not. I'm kind of unsure about that. I'm not surprised at the government's reaction, especially since 2001, where the issue of cyber terrorism and cyber crime has been put on the table so strongly.
Now, the Dutch is going after the groups as well, but it seemed to be a little bit less aggressive. Is that more sensible?
I think it is a little more sensible.
So if Lodewijk is still listening, he's doing a better job.
I mean, it's definitely the case that the U.S. has always kind of push things to the extreme, I think, when it comes to some of the punishments against hacking compared to their European counterparts or their Australian counterparts. It's interesting. Australia on the books often looks much worse when it comes to some of the laws, but in practice, they often have just sort of slapped people on the wrists. Whereas in the United States, with some exceptions, actually, not everyone gets in huge trouble, but there have been some very notorious cases where the punishment, some people felt there should be a punishment, but the punishment they felt that was delivered exceeded the crime. So that's the question on the table. I don't think a lot of people think that those involved in DDoS or hacking should not be in some level in legal trouble. But the question is whether the punishment will be too severe.
I think that's a very nice end. Gabriella Camden, thank you so much for speaking to us. You are a law, you are a anthropologist at the University of New York. Good luck with your work and keep studying these very interesting subjects.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And you're still listening to Binary Voice, your voice in the digital world and on this Chaos Communication Camp. My name is Brenno de Winter and you're listening to 92.6 FM. In the studio right now is nobody less than Jaap, and Jaap is with the Fab Lab truck. What on earth is that?
Well, the Fab Lab truck is a mobile Fab Lab. And then probably a next question is, what
is a Fab Lab? Yeah,
it's a place where you can make stuff, not software, but physical stuff. But to make it more comfortable for the people in this camp, you don't have to use the hacksaw, but you can just make a design file, and then machines will actually make the stuff that you want to make. So it's very convenient for people like me who know how to program but have problems using hand tools.
Yeah, I know you from 2 years ago, because then you made a wonderful t-shirt for me from the VNG. Vraag naar geld. That's a Dutch joke. But the thing was, it was really cool to make your own t-shirt there. Is that something people can do over here?
Yes. Yeah, we have a truck next to the hardware tent. And people can come there, make their own t-shirts, make engravings in your laptop on your own risk, of course. Or just make other tools, make a nice box for the electronics you just designed. Things like that.
Yeah, and of course it's fun to do. Is it expensive?
In the truck you only pay for the materials that you use. So it depends a little bit if you want to use acrylic glass or just wood. Wood is not that expensive, and you can bring your own materials as well if you have them.
Yeah, and now you are not in the truck, but you are standing in the hardware village, or in the hardware tent at Hack Square.
Yeah, one of the things we realized when we started mobile Fab Lab was that we ran into the problem that if you want to drive a laser cutter, which is one of the most important machines in Fab Lab, you need a proprietary Windows software, and I don't like Windows.
Yeah, you won't be the only one at this camp that is not a big fan of Windows. So now you're all Linux focused?
No, we are writing a laser cutter driver, which is multi-platform, which can be used on Linux, but also it works on Mac and even on Windows. So you can drive your laser from any program on any operating system.
Now, if I've got a lot of money and I would like to do that myself, could I? Would you give me the software and stuff?
Yeah, we give the software away for free, of course, because it's an open source project. We also give the drawings for the hardware away for free. And you can support our project by buying one of the prototype hardware boards. Because at the moment, actually, it's quite expensive to build one or two of these boards.
Yes.
But if you build a few hundred, they get as cheap as the CCC rocket. So hopefully in a couple of months we will be able to make them by the thousands and sell them for something like 12 euros a piece.
And that basically means that it does pay off to have a little bit of competition, even, because then main price goes down, and
yeah,
your aim is really to make people happy.
Yeah, but we're not in the business of selling boards or something, so we hope someone else will pick up on it and start selling them. For us, because I'm too lazy to sell them and ship them and things like that. That's not my business.
Yeah, now I've positioned myself here as the person I am, kind of clumsy. Would I be able to make a t-shirt or thing myself?
I guess so. If you're able to make a drawing on the computer, you can just use that drawing to make a t-shirt. In the last few months, we also did workshops with kids, where the kids use just a piece of paper and a black marker, and they draw the t-shirt on the piece of paper, and then we scan it in and we make the t-shirt from that. So it can be as simple as that.
Yeah, right now it's raining, but if the rain has stopped, where basically do you want people to go to see it for themselves?
Well, today the day is almost over, so I would recommend people to come tomorrow tonight, make a design and come tomorrow with your design to the truck, or drop by tonight to ask questions about how you make a design.
Yeah.
Usually to make a t-shirt, it takes you about half an hour if your design is already there, and then you can use the equipment there to make it.
Okay. Yeah, thank you so much for explaining all this. Cool project, really cool, and people really should come to Hack Square and check it out for themselves.
I think so.
Thank you. And you're back at Binary Force 92.6 FM. My name is Brianno de Winter. And for those of you who haven't noticed, the rain has started. And it is like the monsoon has started. So we have closed down our tent. And of course, you can still come in and be merry and happy and bring us some beer. And that's all very good. But you have to fight the rain first. Fighting the rain is here in the studio, nobody less than Stitch.
Hi, Brianno.
Yeah, and Stitch is in the same hackerspace as I am. And you do retro.
Yeah, the
how? How retro are you?
I'm 27 years old, so I'm about 100% retro.
Yes, and if I look at the tent, you know, it's immensely visited.
Yeah,
people are playing games that I was playing in the 80s.
Yeah.
What have you got there?
Well, we've got about everything we could find, from Amigas to NES, Nintendo Entertainment Systems, Segas, Commodores. We've got Ataris and everything on large beamers. So, pretty much everything.
When we were walking over to the studio, there was this guy lying on his back, and then the beamer was projecting on the roof of the tent. You know, that is so awesome.
Yeah, and it works fine. So you can walk below and don't interrupt anybody and still play with four players at the same time, Smash Brothers or something. The couch is usually taken. And tonight we're gonna place the couches outside again if it's not gonna rain. And outside there will be two more beamers with multiplayer games. So more fun.
It is, yeah. And you've built it in Arnhem as well, right?
Yeah, there's a location in Arnhem, in the hackerspace Hack 42, and there's a small section with about 7 TVs and a lot of consoles, gaming consoles, and vintage hardware. And Hack 42 itself has a lot of vintage hardware, an entire museum, so it fits excellent in its collection. And people play on it, and people hack with it, and break stuff, and so it's awesome.
Yeah, and basically have a good time, have fun with it, and yeah. Now, you also have built a museum.
Well, we do make a list of the stuff we got for people that want to lend something. If somebody wants to lend something for a gig, event, or festival, you can just contact us and say, hey, man, I want to have this and this and this. And we say, yeah, come and pick it up, or should we ship it to you? It's all free. Because the things, we get them for free, and we want to share that with everybody. But in itself, it looks like a museum, maybe if you enter the tent, because there's so much there. But
in Arnhem, you are building a museum.
Yeah, that's true. We're building a museum in Arnhem, which has about every grade of server server hardware from the 80s, 70s, and the 90s, a PDP.
Even a PDP. It was kind of funny that Rob Gongrijp was opening our space, and he was doubting whether he would come, and then I said to him, but we also got a PDP. Okay, when was it again? And then there he was.
Yeah. Wow, he wanted an account on it, so we should get it working.
We should, yeah. And we've got in the newsroom, we've got a telex. Yeah. So we
At Fernscriber, right? At Fernscriber.
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
There's some guy who came up to me yesterday. He said, I've got this real vintage hardware from the DDR Republic. A laptop, a huge laptop with 50 kilograms. With the three, they said they shipped it with three tape drives or the floppy drives, and they. But in real life, only units with two floppy drives were shipped because of they were really poor here. So those things.
At Fernschreiber, I believe, is in the hardware room,
uh-huh.
And the other telex is basically on IRC.
Oh, IRC.
Yeah.
What channel? Where can I?
I don't know. I haven't tried it out yet.
It's a binary voice.
It's the binary voice channel that. Oh, that is cool. I didn't know that. And the node is free node.
Yes.
So okay. So every line that you type in in IRC will get telex here.
Yes. So don't DDoS it.
I'll try not to.
No. Okay. Hey, but back to the tent. I see like tens of people standing there.
Yeah. It's always very busy. It's it's never overcrowded, but it's always very busy, and people can recognize us very easily with the giant Pac-Man in front, and it draws attention, and people walk and sit down.
Yeah, you're turning around because from the studio we can see indeed the tent.
Yeah.
So that is really neat.
Yeah, well, the tent, it's always crowded, and people play about every game. Any game is played, and people try out new games, new old games, and it's amazing to see that everybody's having fun and that it all comes together.
Yes,
this gives a really great feeling. And this makes makes me really happy, and I think a lot of the visitors.
Well, you know, at first I thought, like, where are you going with the museum? And interesting, but, you know, it's a bit of junk. But now I think we've got every piece nearly working, and it's actually a lot of fun. And I've had evenings that I'm at the hackerspace playing with old machines that I had never touched before.
Yeah, the Apple Lisa, for example.
Yeah,
it's a really excellent piece.
Everybody knows about it. Everybody has read about it. And now there we have one.
You can touch one, play with it, install software. It has even Apple Talk networking or something like that. So maybe in the future, near future, there will be a browser on it so you can visit the internet from your computer.
That would be lead. Hey, what's next? I mean, you go back to the Netherlands, and then what are you going to do with Retro?
We're working on a strategy on what to do now. Basically, the strategy now is to build up locations. And now we've got hacker spaces like in The Hague and Hack 42 in Arnhem.
Yes.
And there will be more if the hacker spaces are interested in a retro section. That's a nice word. it's possible to collaborate and get stuff over there and play with it. That's one part, but that's only in the Netherlands. And we're also thinking big, of course, and thinking outside of the box. And the concept itself is really easy to copy and to implement in your own spaces, such as in Germany or wherever in the world. And my ideal would be that spaces will be shipping game consoles and swapping game consoles between them, and making even more retro gaming events possible all around the globe. That would be really fantastic.
That is a very fantastic and joyful vision, and it's a cool hack again. Stitch.
Yes, Brenno.
We see each other a lot, but I'm still going to thank you for coming to the studio. And I think it's a really cool project. People should come to Hack Square and check it out. And play a little bit. Before we go to the music, I would like to do a warning. Be aware that tonight we might have a bit of wind, bad weather. So check your tent, check your cables, check everything. Make sure that you won't be inconvenienced and, you know, you have to quit drinking and do other stuff what you really don't want to do. So be careful there. And Stitch, thanks again.
Thank you.
92.6 FM. My name is Brenno de Winter, and over these 2 hours we have been talking about anonymous and DDoSing and that type of stuff a lot. I have spoken to one of the guys that have been arrested, and actually one of the cases of Lodewijk van Zwieten, and that is hacker Iwin. And I spoke to him earlier, and he thinks that he has been thinks he has been singled out, and we are going to listen to that interview. Iwin, you have been doing something very illegal, according to media reports.
I took down several websites, one of them which included the server of the Dutch public prosecutor website, who were silly enough to tie it together with the Dutch police website and put it on one server and on the same IP.
You got caught.
Yep.
How does that work? Because I did a hack in January to make a journalistic point. I got a notification that the police wanted to talk with me in June. So if you did it in December, they must have had such a letter in May.
I got it one day later.
So they were at your doorstep. And then they throw you at the ground, put your hands
on them. No, they knocked on the door. They came in screaming, "Police, please." They ran into the front room first. My dad came down as I was sleeping. My dad came down. Asked what he wondered what was going on. They were asking where I was. He sat in the back of the house, and they ran back out of the house, actually, because if you open the back door, it basically covers the door to my room. So they ran back outside, came back in, and asked where is he then, and went back and went into the toilet together, all together, and then finally they came into my room. As I was already awake, obviously, I was pulling on some pants, and they said that I was under arrest for taking down several websites.
I know. So what did you use?
I personally used a program called HOIC. It's not a very spectacular tool, and there's many ways, obviously, to do it, but as long as it does the job for what I wanted to make my point with, I'm happy with it.
That means that if you use such a tool, I know shed lots of people who use such a tool. I know the low orbit cannon and other tools. Basically, you didn't do anything different than them.
Anyone, right? As I said, anyone can do it. Anyone that has the program on their computer and uses it is doing the same as I did.
So basically, all in all, you are really arrested for no other reason than making the public prosecutor not look good.
I think that's the reason, yeah, because I'm pretty sure that if I didn't take down the Dutch prosecutor's website, that I wouldn't have been arrested, because they wouldn't be interested in it.
Okay, you're out on the street now. How long did you spend
I spent about
jail?
A day in jail, not too long.
Did they torture you?
No, even to a newspaper apparently said I got tortured. I didn't get tortured, but no, they treated me very nice, and except for the fact that, which is why the newspaper said I got tortured, or suggested that I got tortured. The light stays on, or stays half on, when you go at night, obviously, for security reasons, I guess. So that was quite annoying, and I slept with a jacket over my head, but besides that, no torture at all, or they just treated me nice.
And now what?
I'm still waiting to be prosecuted right now. I got notice that I'm going to be prosecuted, that they see reason to prosecute me, so I'm now waiting to be prosecuted, which they already said back in December that it could take up to maximum of 2 years before I even get to see the inside of a courtroom. So.
That is pretty interesting. And then what sentence can you get, maximum?
If I have to believe the media and the Dutch prosecutor, I can get a sentence up to a maximum of 6 years. So that's quite a bit, considering that murderers sometimes don't even get that much.
That is pretty stiff. And I can relate to your feeling, because you know that I have a similar case where I can also get up to 6 years in prison. Now, knowing everything that we know right now, would you ever do this again?
It depends, but if I would go back in time, and I want to make sure that people know that they don't misunderstand this. If I would go back in time, which I can't, because I don't have a time machine, but if I could, I would still do the same thing, but I would at least be more aware of the Dutch prosecutor's website, which was my biggest mistake.
She would take down my website, no problem, but one of the public prosecutors...
I'm going to stay away from any Dutch website. I would stay away from any Dutch website, sorry.
Would you be so kind and leave the website of Binary Voice, this radio station?
Oh yeah, I would. I will leave that one alone.
And that's why I'm so grateful for Hacker Irene, because he's going to leave us alone, and you other people, you should do the same. Time for some music. 92.6 FM, this is Binary Voice, and as every day in the studio, nobody less than Chantal Klaver.
Hi, Bruno.
Chantal.
Yes.
You were working on The Hitchhiker's Guide for the Hackers.
Yes.
How did that go?
It failed. I don't have enough knowledge to put HTML into the wiki. So I failed.
So now you are basically using the social network. Who wants to help Chantal Klaver for tomorrow?
Yeah, to put HTML into the wiki.
Yep.
Or to write a piece in which you can say, I offer a ride and I'm searching for a ride.
Yes. Well, that's it. I can kick you out and you did do nothing today.
No, that's not entirely true. By the way, about the hitchhiking, I want to do it again.
Uh-huh.
So tonight I will fix it, and I also do the analog stuff at the entrance, so you don't even have to use the online thing to tell where you're going, but you can do it with your DECT phone number at the entrance.
Yes.
And I didn't feel completely at learning something new today. I went to the forest with Dan, or Eco Hippie.
Eco Hippie.
Eco Hippie, yes.
That sounds very hippie.
Yeah. It kind of is. And we went to look for salad tonight to eat from the forest. And we kind of succeeded in it.
You've been hacking the forest.
We've been hacking the forest, yes.
So now
that's true. I didn't know anything about it.
Now you've got a whole bag.
Yeah, a whole bag with all sorts of stuff you can eat or make tea from. And one stuff is for the tea. And the other, like violets and clover and thousand something.
Something.
I don't know the English names and my Latin isn't that okay. So, but we've got like 5 different types to put in the salad.
Can you give me an example? Like when you also said making tea?
Yeah. That's with, I don't know the English word, brandnetel? Anyone? I've got no idea, but usually when you touch it, it's getting itchy.
Well, let's see if Google can translate it. So
probably it can, but I know the Dutch names, but I don't know the English names in it because I never use it in English.
Okay. Yeah.
And that you can use for for tea. And we also got literally translated. Bird wall, vogelmuur.
Yeah, nestle is it in German? Brandnetel.
Yes.
And nettle in English.
Nettle, yes. Why not?
Yeah.
Nettle, yeah. So that's for the tea, and it's itchy if you touch it.
But if you drink it as tea, it's good.
Yeah, it's pretty healthy.
You're not going to poison me with it.
No, you're not getting poisoned from tea from that.
How much time do you spend, you know, looking for the usual?
We kind of spent a lot of time because we were actually looking for berries as well. But we found 5 berries altogether because everything else were already harvested.
Poison ivy is somebody on Twitter saying to me.
Poison ivy, that's brandnetel.
Yeah, but okay, yeah. Well... I believe this source a little bit better than Google, but there's not that much needed.
Because now he says it, I know what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we are going to find it out tonight. If I'm sick tomorrow, you know who is to blame.
Yeah, blame me.
Absolutely. And of course, we are going to barbecue. It seems that the sky is dry again. Chantal, thank you so much for doing all the work.
Yeah, of
today.
Course. It's
and
really
hope,
fun.
I really, really hope, and it would be just in time, if tomorrow we have the Hitchhiker's Guide for the Hackers.
Yes, to get a ride back home and see where everybody's going. And if you need to go to the train station, maybe someone can give you a ride because they're leaving anyway. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Having said that, we are going to hit the end of the show. And at the end of the show, I'm always doing one song. And that is because I don't want to go to jail for being a journalist. And that's why I'm playing Don't Fence Me In. Thank you. Okay, and we're back at 92.6 FM. The failing of the technique wasn't Xopper, but that was definitely me, Brenno de Winter. We're reaching the top of the hour, and that is good to run through the top of the news. A bunch of pirates have been convicted in the Netherlands and gotten a 7-year prison sentence for basically robbing Dutch ships. In the United Kingdom, Cameron wants that social media are forbidden during the riots. And we have been looking a lot at Anonymous, at prosecution, investigation, and that type of stuff. We have dismantled Anonymous, and basically that were the 2 hours of the news, the news hour. Next to me is in the studio again, Stitch.
Hi, Brenno.
Hey, what are you going to do?
Random radio again, and random radio has no preparation, but we're gonna browse to the internet to find tracks we like. It's a freak show and it's awesome.
Okay, and somebody hinted me that there is this intergalactic.fm. And there you have an intergalactic automat, so maybe that is something interesting to browse.
We're gonna do that.
I was afraid you might say that. Okay, my time is up. I am Brenno de Winter. Behind all the buttons is nobody less than Mr. Xopper. Yay!
Yeah.
And thank you for listening. Tomorrow we have a new show. Pick us up at 4 p.m. and we'll be broadcasting until 6 p.m. Thank you so much for listening and have a nice day.